Welcome to Cryptic Picnic, a podcast where cozy conversations unfold over episodes of intrigue, discovery, and laughter.
Hosted by two ghouls and former co-workers turned long-distance friends, Cryptid Picnic is sure to satisfy your appetite for the strange and peculiar. So Easter Sunday was like eggs party because it became
eggs
a real
party.
The theory behind this association of witches with brooms could also stem from hallucinogenic substances.
Yes!
Have you heard anything about this?
Yes, I have looked into this before. Welcome to episode 3 of the Cryptic Picnic. I am your co-host, Ivy.
And I am your co-host, Carla. Today, I have prepared a feast of wonderful pieces. I'm kind of excited.
How many pages of notes did you say this is?
8? So altogether, let me check. It's 11 pages altogether.
Okay.
But I think that usable, it's only 8.
All right. So this is going to be a long one. I absolutely cannot wait. For reference, my last episode, it was about half an hour long. That was like 4 or 5 pages of notes. So we're looking at a good, 45 minutes, an hour? I'm excited. Yes. I'm so excited.
Oh, and I'm sure I'm not even, I'm just giving little excerpts too. I can do bigger, deeper dives into some of these subjects at a different time.
I'm ready for the ride. I've got some matcha over here for my side of the picnic.
Your tasty coolness.
You mentioned this is going to be a long one, and I said I'm ready to sit here with my matcha, and I'm just going to eat this whole episode up.
Yes, I will be talking about a time of spring awakening, the renewals and resurrections, fun traditions, and most importantly, Air travel.
Oh, okay. I like air travel. I just traveled by air on my recent. Wait, what are you drinking?
I have a beautiful cucumber lemon water.
Okay, because I just saw. Sorry, no one can obviously see this, but I can see Carl, and she pulls up a fancy little glass with cucumbers in it. Wow.
And then, as my extra self, knowing that I'm gonna have to talk more, this is a lemonade.
Oh yeah, you're gonna need to wet your whistle through this episode. Moisten that gullet and get ready.
So I wrote a little description that I think will set up what I'm about to talk about pretty nicely. So would you mind using your imagination?
Mm-hmm.
Imagine deep, deep within your mind's eye. The last leaves of autumn have fallen ever so gracefully to the ground, and the cold and bitter winds have arrived. Each day the light becomes shorter and shorter, and it gives night that much more darkness. It begins to snow, and it may not stop for days. In smaller villages, not unlike this one, farmers may use their tractors in the winter to help the municipality keep the roads and the parking lots as clear as possible. These piles of snow in unused corners of parking lots, covering sidewalks, narrowing the roads. Winter tires are mandatory for vehicles, and small rocks are thrown down in hopes of giving traction during these harsher climates. Layers of packed snow under your feet. Walking trails within the forest are hidden. Not a shred of earth is visible. And most of the winter months are gray. They stay freezing cold, and then turn back to the dark of night.
Ooh.
So how do you feel so far?
I feel like this is like an actual like story time. I'm zoned out. I'm color me enthralled.
Is my voice just ASMR enough or no?
For that, you would need to be a little softer and close to your mic.
Oh, I'm sorry. But I'm sorry. Yeah, okay. That's fair. Okay. The weather has started getting dreary and cold, but luckily in December we have some sort of celebration. My husband's family celebrates Christmas. I celebrated Christmas in the United States. There are a few differences here and there, but we can get into that at a different time. It's mostly the same. So whatever is celebrated in December is going to be traveling to be with friends and family. There will be food and warmth and love. Think Tiny Tim. But then the winter solstice happens sometime in mid-December. It's a little bit different of a celebration in Sweden and is recognized through other countries and cultures around the world, which we can also talk about at a different time. The important thing to know is that the solstice is simply either the longest or the shortest day of the year. So the winter solstice signals that this is the longest night and the shortest day, and it has happened. And so then each day will start having more light.
Mm-hmm.
Am I making sense? Because
that does. I mean, we get a little bit of solstice stuff here in the U.S., but that's mostly in like witchy pagan communities pay attention to it. But I feel like in Sweden, where you are, it might be a little more significant, I guess. But I guess you get a lot more cold weather and stuff, so that might be a bigger deal for you than like here in the Midwest, where our winters are a little more mild than what you get, I imagine.
Yeah, Missouri has a little more mild winters, for sure.
Yeah, than Sweden.
So I have a little bit left. And so as this entire story moves into the new year, it may snow for a few more months and the winds may still be cold, and there still may be stints of gray days, but when the sun does shine, it'll shine a little longer.
Mm-hmm.
And then anyone who lives in the cold for the majority of the year is accustomed to being out in it. There's actually a really common Swedish phrase. It's "Det finns inget dålig väder, bara dåliga kläder," which means that there is no such thing as bad weather, just bad clothes.
Oh, I like that.
And so, my dear friend and our dear listeners, as I wrap my tiny, tiny story up, now it's time to fucking party.
Oh, whoa.
Oh.
Whoa. Get the air horn. Na-na-na-na.
So we are specifically going to be focusing on Easter as the spring traditionalistic story, because I think that plays in nicely with specifically what I want to talk about. So Easter itself, this is not going to be a history of Easter. It's just important to understand that Easter is one of the most, if not the most important Christian holiday, and is widely celebrated all across the world.
Yeah.
So if I set this table for you, after the major holiday in December and the celebration of the new year, it's still cold, even if it starts getting more sun.
Yeah.
So 40 days before Easter, and sometimes even longer, followers will observe Lent. Lent is the time in the spring for fasting and prayer and penance, to give up something for a period of time and to contemplate. Mm-hmm. You're supposed to be one with yourself and the divine being.
Yeah.
And so Easter commemorates like the crucifixion on Good Friday and the resurrection of the dead on Easter Sunday. And then the meal on Easter Sunday is called the Movable Feast or the Feast of Feasts. And it just is simply supposed to shine how important this celebration is.
Yeah.
For me personally, my family wasn't particularly religious.
Mine was not either, so.
And so now I feel like I'm more spiritual, but non-religious.
Mm-hmm.
I did play handbells for a Baptist church in my hometown for like 6 or 7 years, but.
So that's something. It's something. It's more than I can say. I grew up in a household with a mom that was what I would also describe as spiritual, not necessarily like Christian or Catholic or anything. And then my dad was much more atheist. So I kind of grew up like not knowing like, who's Ooh. Jesus? What's the Bible? Until like embarrassingly late in life. So
I also think it's so interesting that it's the idea of a movable feast, because the exact date of Easter varies each year depending on the lunar calendar.
Oh.
So it's typically celebrated the first Sunday after the first full moon following the equinox, which is sometime mid-March.
Yeah.
And so that is why Easter changes. And I can honestly say I did not know that until I started researching this.
I didn't know that until about 3 seconds ago. So, I knew it was on different days. I just I didn't know why. It's just each year, oh, which day is Easter on? And I checked my calendar. I don't know why.
So then I feel like Easter becomes associated with various other customs and traditions. This can include, so where I'm from in the U.S., we did Easter egg hunts and decorated eggs and had an Easter bunny, sometimes an actual bunny rabbit, and sometimes somebody dressed up in a bunny rabbit costume.
I believed in the Easter bunny until I was also embarrassingly old. I think I was the last kid in my class to still hold on to hope that Easter bunny and Santa were real.
What about the tooth fairy? Where were you with the tooth fairy?
Oh, I was a gullible child who did not understand sarcasm or the concept of lying, which kind of explains a lot about how adult me turned out the way she did. But I believed anything and everything I was told, because it's well, why would someone say that if it's not true? So people said the Easter bunny was real, so he was real. I remember looking out the window when I saw, I was peeking out the window to try and see the Easter bunny, and I'm late in elementary school at this point, no one else believes in the Easter bunny. And I see my parents and older sisters putting out the Easter eggs. And that's when I finally had to accept that the Easter bunny wasn't the one putting them out there.
You're like, it wasn't the Easter bunny.
I was still am devastated to this day. But continue, no. Carla. Not to hijack your episode. Continue.
So I know. So for me, for example, for me in particular, this was more about feasting, having some sort of food with my friends and my family. Mm-hmm. And then we would do an Easter egg hunt, and we always had the one uncle that would put money in the egg, and you always wanted to find that egg.
Yeah.
But some other ones that I have been really interested in has been, so in New Zealand, for example, there is an Easter celebration, and they deal with hot cross buns and chocolate eggs, food, again, huge deal. But there's also the Auckland Easter Show or the Royal Easter Show. And it's an annual traditional festival that began in 1843.
Oh, wow. Annual since 1843.
It was annual 1843 until 2020, and then they had to cancel. Or it might have been 2021 and 2022 that they canceled, but it was up until just a few years ago before they canceled for the first time because of obviously a pandemic. So,
yeah, that's wild.
And so things at this festival could include different agricultural events or art exhibits, live entertainment, sporting events, rides, sideshows, marketplaces, circuses. It's wild to read about how many people actually go to this every year.
That sounds fun. I want to go to that. Jeez Louise.
So there's a tradition in Germany that is about Easter fires, and they light Easter fires during sunset on the Holy Saturday.
Oh.
There's a lot more control over this now than what I guess there has been in the past, but the regulations now actually create controlled field fires or bonfires so that there can be festivals that have foods, drinks, games, rides. And I don't know how long, it was a little unclear when I was reading about how long they let fires go.
Yeah.
But the idea is that they could even go until morning, because then when you wake up, it's the renewal of the morning.
Oh.
So that is such a wild tradition. There's also, I think, cuter traditions maybe I shouldn't say that.
No.
So I guess there are a little bit cuter traditions. Denmark has a tradition of sending these artful paper cuttings to their friends and family that they hand make.
That's cute. So Valentine's, making a little thing for somebody.
I think that's so sweet. And then Ireland has a tradition of dyeing eggs. And because dyeing the egg is seen as good luck.
Uh-huh.
And then the colored eggshells are then used as decorations for trees in May, as you go through April and May, which actually is a thing in Sweden, too. they put like decorative eggs on top of these sticks and stick them inside bushes.
That's so cute. Everyone gets like so much more fun with the holidays. In America, I feel like we're just too focused on the commercialized side of holidays. So it's like, buy all this plastic junk and stuff that you're going to toss the day after Easter. And then like, that's it. But like, I want to do like celebrations and make little crafts for people and stuff.
I mean, I do know that, again, so like my family didn't really celebrate Easter, but we did get every Friday and Monday off of school. And most of the time my parents got off work. So I definitely remember my mom. She is so sweet sometimes. And like, she would get us like these little baskets and put candy in them sometimes. Like so much more when I was younger than when I was older, but
Little Easter baskets or something.
Because she definitely tried to be like, oh, someone brought something for you. And it's like, you go to the door and it's a basket of candy. And you're like, woo!
Woo! Yeah, yeah. I mean, nothing's better than getting candy as a kid. And that's what, because like, that's how my family celebrated Easter. It was pretty much just like candy and eggs aspect. And that was it. I just knew it as, and we would dye Easter eggs sometimes. But most of the time it was just the Easter egg hunt. And then that was it. But I was happy as a kid because it just meant candy. So sign me up.
Well, and if you're talking about commercialized, I absolutely have a core memory of Caramel Rabbit, Russell Stover's, like, like the big rabbits that just were overly giant and ridiculous. And then, of course, we couldn't eat the whole thing in one setting because we would get diabetes
you'd immediately get sick. Gosh, that resonates with me. I am genetically predisposed to developing type 2 diabetes, so like I'm gonna turn 30 this year and I'm like, I actually have to watch my sugar intake now. I hate it. I just want to eat whatever I want because like every old person in my family gets it. And I did 23andMe, and that even confirmed like, yeah, you need to be careful. Like, you might get this someday. I'm like, gosh, dang it.
Well, how do you feel about eggs? That's the biggest question.
How do I feel about eggs? Just eggs in general?
Yes. Like, do you associate eggs with Easter?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think most people do.
So there are so many traditions with eggs.
Okay. Scrambled, eggs over easy, sunny side up. What are we talking?
There's so many different types of eggs. I could do an entire episode just about the different styles of eggs and where they originated from.
Wait, but this is a picnic. This is a cryptic and picnic. So half the episodes are going to be just like weird off the walls, like macabre, creepy, strange subjects. And then half is just going to be like, so we're talking about eggs today.
I love that idea. So I very much associate eggs with Easter. And the thought is that eggs represent a new life and rebirth. So there's a possibility that this is why it became a custom. But it's also pretty well understood that chickens lay less eggs in winter. And then when spring happens, they just start producing more eggs again. So then you just have more eggs. But I also see that that's why so many cultures will then have eggs for some sort of festivity happening in spring. Because I'm like, because they're every place, everyone had chickens, right?
And that's when birds in the wild, like other birds start laying them too, is springtime. So that makes so much sense.
Also, in some areas and some regions, especially in the medieval period, eating eggs was actually forbidden during Lent.
Oh, really?
So Easter Sunday was like eggs party because it became
eggs
a real
party. Having an egg party.
This was especially true for people who couldn't afford to buy meat during that time. And so the eggs were basically their primary source of protein.
Egg party.
It was an egg party.
I think that's going to be the title of this episode. I'm writing it down. Egg party. Okay, continue.
So then there's obviously the traditional like egg toss games where two people attempt to throw an egg and catch it. And they step further and further apart. And I remember this being done, but with like water balloons instead of eggs.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's also kind of funny to watch somebody just splatter an egg all over themselves.
It is. it's high stakes. It's intense. It's anxiety inducing to watch.
So my Swedish sources also have this thing called egg tapping. One of the guys that I know is originally from Macedonia. His father is Islamic. And egg tapping, I've never done this, but it's when two people take eggs and they tap them together until one of them cracks. Uh-huh. And the other person who doesn't have a cracked egg gets a wish.
Oh, okay. So like the wishbone pulling kind of. Yeah. Like, so it's like two people interacting with this. They each have an egg and they crack it together.
And then it's also, when I was looking it up, I guess this is also done a lot in Louisiana area. So down.
Oh.
I don't know if anybody wants to corroborate that, but because I have no idea. I've never done this. So
I mean, immigrants probably might have brought that over to some parts out here. So
absolutely, absolutely. I think that if there's anything you can take away from this episode, is that the movement of people just kind of mends and blends different types of traditions.
Yeah.
So I love it. So food wise, Christ is the Lamb of God. And so lamb is traditionally a very Easter food through a lot of cultures. Again, I never celebrated Easter, but I definitely remember some of the people I went to school with would talk about eating lamb for Easter. So, one of my favorite ones that I think that this is after the Swedish witch that I'm about to talk about.
Oh, but I'm so excited for that.
But in Norway, there's a contemporary tradition that includes reading or watching murder mysteries.
Okay.
Such as
I'm down.
Such as whodunit style crime shows or detective novels that are published around the time of spring.
Okay. I'm bringing this tradition to the US. Like, this cultural syncretism, like, I'm on it.
So I don't know if there's anyone native to Norway, but I would love any sort of confirmation on this particular tradition.
Uh-huh.
Would you like to know about any Swedish smorgasbord?
Yes.
Okay, so traditional Easter lunch in Sweden likely consists of different varieties of pickled herring.
Oh, I've seen pickled herring videos on TikTok before. I'm so sorry, but as someone who never liked fish, like, I'm vegan now, but pre-vegetarian, like, pre-any of that, I was not a fish person.
So, I have definitely, I try to be pretty open about trying cultural foods.
Mm-hmm.
There's some that I enjoy and I will eat again. And there are others that I don't like and I don't want to eat those again. So I think it definitely depends on kind of how it's pickled, I think, for me.
Yeah.
There's also a very typical Swedish food called gravlax. It's a dill cured salmon, and it's served with typically with a mustard sauce.
That sounds like it has more,
it's like the preferable,
more potential.
It's pretty good. I like it. So, and then there is Jonsson's Temptation.
Oh, oh,
it's potatoes, onions, and pickled anchovies, and then they're baked in a cream.
Okay. Anchovies.
Yeah, my husband's not a fan, but I've had it before and it's pretty tasty. I don't want a lot of it, but I'll eat some of it.
In moderation.
in moderation. And then obviously eggs.
Yeah.
Favorite accompaniment to these dishes of pickled herrings, you know. Centerpiece of the Easter meal is obviously eggs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So this brings me to one of my favorite Swedish traditions, and that is the Swedish påskkärring. It means
Post-sharing.
Yeah. So it's so I also would like to preference that I am a U.S. American living in Sweden and learning Swedish as a second language. So please forgive me if my pronunciation is off. So påsk is Easter in Swedish. And sharing is a little bit more complicated because the direct Google translation is bitch.
Oh.
But according to my Swedish sources, a sharing is more of like a grumpy old person. That's typically a woman.
Oh,
okay. So somebody that's deemed more like a crone or a hag or a witch, which is where like påskkärring then translates into Easter witch.
Love it. Here for it.
It is a recognized tradition in both Sweden and Finland, in the Finland legend as well. It's very similar to Halloween in some respects. So children will dress up in a costume. And they'll go door to door reciting a sweet little rhyme or singing a song, possibly even making handmade cards in exchange for candy or other treats. When homeowners are prepared, they might even have fresh baked goodies for these little trick-or-treaters. They're not tricking anybody. They're just treaters, actually. They're just going for treats. So instead of dressing up as something scary, though, the children will dress up as witches. And these depictions of witches are super cute. Honestly, adorable. They are wearing long skirts and head scarves. They might even paint their faces to have rosy cheeks. And then they're often carrying like a broomstick or some sort of decorated birch twigs. It's pretty sweet.
It is. I just Googled it. They got little like head scarves and little rosy cheeks painted on.
Yes, it is adorable. Oh
my God, this is cute.
So this is a pretty modern tradition to the point where my husband and his siblings actually did this as children. And there are pictures of them somewhere. I was sworn to not share those particular photographs with the public. So sworn to secrecy. It's
really holding out on us. Wow.
I know.
Wow.
I'm so sorry. I was told that it is top secret information. I'm not allowed to share.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
But we can probably share a photo on our page.
I'll find some cute ones on Google. Wikipedia will have my back.
Super cute. I don't think that it's quite as common to send your children off to go to people's houses anymore. Mm-hmm. I think it's a little bit more common in the last like 15 years to just kind of focus on family members or school functions of some kind. So a little bit smaller of a tradition, but I still think it's really cute.
It's so stinking cute.
And then the roots of the Easter witch, of the påskkärring tradition, can date back hundreds of years. And there's obvious superstitions into witchcraft. And, you know, traditionally, parts of Swedish Easter are still loosely followed, like, especially with this. So hundreds of years ago, people definitely believed that witches were flying through the air on broomsticks to this Swedish island called Blakula. So the witches flew to Blakula, which is Blue Hill. It translates to Blue Hill from Swedish. And it is where the witches had their earthly court and their magical festivals with the devil before they returned on Easter Eve.
Sign me up for that.
Doesn't that just sound fun? Doesn't that just sound like a fun time?
Yeah, I will be there. You can count on that.
So each region of Sweden obviously has their own customs for protecting itself against witches' spells. It can range from people lighting bonfires to shooting fireworks into the sky to drawing crosses on their front doors. There are written works where villagers would even like hide brooms and make sure their barn doors were locked so that witches couldn't fly away or get to their livestock. So there are superstitions of witchcraft probably in every culture.
Yeah. But
these are just some fun ones. So the current island of Blanc-Unifru was once called Blacula, which means Blue Hill again, and in medieval days was rumored to be the mystical place of witches and where they gathered. One of the first times that Blacula was mentioned in a witch trial was allegedly by a witch, and that was in 1597.
Oh, wow.
So in reality, it was not until the Swedish witch hunt mania of the 1600s that the place had any real importance to the prosecution or the persecution of witches.
Uh-huh.
And I can totally get into Swedish witch hunting on another episode because it's wild.
We're going to have to do like a series on it, because in my last episode, I mentioned the Salem witch trials. Like, I can go on and on about that. You can talk about your witch trials in Sweden. Oh my gosh.
So it is pretty wild. But Blå-Unifrun is now a national park. So you can visit, you can go on hikes, you can have a fika or a picnic.
Ooh, and that's where some witches were persecuted, perhaps. So
it's really interesting because I don't really think that they were persecuted on the island as much as this was just a place that people referred to as a place for witches to meet.
Okay.
So it's kind of complicated when you start reading about witches and people talking about how they took them to Blacula and like they stole the children, and it's kind of crazy.
More like folk tales maybe than like actual historical facts.
It's kind of wild because it's a very strange folklore that was so real at the time that on record, there was over 400 deaths within an 8-year period. It's from an official Swedish source, which states that over 400 quote-unquote witches were murdered during that time.
Wow, that's bad.
And it gets so far, I don't know if we want to put this in this episode, but it is fucking crazy. So there was the last two people that were literally murdered. They were straight up murdered. The second to last one was burned at the stake. And then the last one was, I think, beheaded. And then, because a lot of times they would kill them first and then burn their bodies.
And then burn, yeah.
But I don't know. I don't know why they thought this woman was just so bad that they decided to burn her at the stake. She was the last person who was ever prosecuted.
Was her name Anne Goldie? Or is that might be another one. Because I've looked up like one of the quote-unquote last persecuted witches, but she might be a different one than the one you're talking about.
Her name was Anne something. Anne Erik's daughter.
Oh, okay, so a different Anne. But
she was, gosh. She was decapitated, and she was the last person executed in Sweden.
Jeez Louise, what a grim subject. We are going to have to do like whole separate episodes just on some of this stuff.
Yeah, like I'm like, I don't know that I should like dig too deep into that. Because
we went from like fun egg parties to like witches being decapitated then burned at the stake.
Yeah, I'm like, I don't know. Like, I'm already going to mention some stuff. Like, I decided that I wanted to talk about brooms too because I freaking love it. And so it's just like I have so many fun things about brooms, and I just thought that just to keep it a little bit lighter, because again, once you start talking about like decapitating people and like burning them at the stake, I'm like, it's not quite as fun anymore.
So it's just for some reason it's not as fun to talk about.
It sounds
almost crazy.
Sounds a little sad, you know?
Yeah, just a little bit.
So I really believe that over time, a lot of these beliefs have moved. People have migrated from place to place. And a lot of these traditions have started mixing, resulting in some of these really fun modern practices, such as the poshering. So one of my favorite particular subjects about witches, about poshering, about just like the overall depiction of witches in Eastern culture is the brooms. And I decided I wanted to talk about air travel today because I think it's ridiculously expensive. And if you could fly by broom, let me tell you what.
We need merch someday that's like something about like air travel, like, and it's a broomstick and it's like you and I on a little broom.
Listen, I played Hogwarts Legacy and I can just tell you now that if you want to help with carbon emissions, just ride a freaking broom to just, wherever you need to go.
Listen, when Kid Me was A, set on being a ghost hunter, but B, was also like secretly reading books on witchcraft also alone in my bedroom, I remember To Ride a Silver Broomstick by Silver Ravenwolf was my first book on witchcraft. And I was devastated when I got to a part in that book where she kind of joked about how, like, witches don't actually, like, physically ride on brooms. I was like, wait, what? I was like, well, what's the point if I don't get to fly on a broomstick? Like, I thought I could do that. I was literally, to this day, upset over it that I can't fly on a broom. Actually upset.
So did you, it's just so interesting to me because like I also learned that the word broom, like the broom itself, the sweeping device, is from a plant or a shrub that was used during that time. Mm-hmm. So the word broom or besom, it comes from the actual plant or shrub that was used to make the early sweeping device itself. And broom gradually replaced the old English word besom. And so those two terms were pretty much used until the 18th century, and obviously we use broom now. Mm-hmm. So from the beginning, brooms and besoms were both primarily associated with women.
Oh, I wonder why. Domestic duties.
And yeah, household object, female domesticality, like it pretty much fits, right? I did read though that there was a custom in some areas where women would prop their broom either on the door or outside the door, and it would let people know that they were away from the home.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
So there is a theory that if the broom wasn't there, then obviously she was using it.
Uh-huh. Or maybe she's off flying on it.
She was flying to the Blue Hill to meet the devil, you know? Yeah. Like, it makes sense.
With me, yeah.
The irony of all of this, the irony, is that the first witch recorded to confess to riding a broom or a besom was a man. Guillaume Erenlin was a priest from Saint-Germain-en-Laye near Paris. Also, don't speak French, so forgive me as well. He was arrested in 1453 and tried for witchcraft.
Oh, hey. And then we decided that it was just going to be mostly women after that, I guess.
Do you want to guess why? Do you want to guess why he was tried for witchcraft?
Oh, gosh. Did he sleep around or something? Did he, like, was he promiscuous?
Wow, that would have been way more fun. No, he was actually publicly criticizing the church's warnings about witches.
He pulled the Uno reverse.
Right.
The church pulled it. He's like, y'all need to stop getting crazy with this witch stuff. And they're like, he be a witch.
You know, though, he did confess, so.
And we know that confessions,
under torture.
Yeah, we know that confessions under duress and torture is a great way to get someone to confess to something real, right?
So he did confess, and it unfortunately was under torture, and he did eventually repent, but was also still unfortunately imprisoned for the rest of his life.
Great.
So by the time of this, you know, quote-unquote confession, the idea of witches riding a broom had been established because the earliest known image of brooms and witches being on brooms actually dates to 1451, which was 2 years before poor Edelin was tried for witchcraft.
Yeah, that poor guy.
Those two illustrations were from the French poet Martin Lefranc's manuscript Les Champions des Dames.
Whoa.
Is it Dames? Les Champions des Dames.
Don't ask me.
It translates to the defender of ladies.
Oh.
And it's two drawings. One is a woman that soars through the air on a broom. And the other one is flying with a plain white stick.
Okay.
Both of them are wearing headscarves. So again, very similar to the depiction that we know of from the Poskschering. They wear headscarves.
Yeah, they do.
And those headscarves in these particular illustrations identified the witches, or like witches, as Waldenses, which are members of a church, a Christian sect that was founded in the 12th century. And they were branded as heretics by the Catholic Church. Do you want to know why? Would you like to know why?
Yeah, enlighten me.
Because they allowed women to become priests.
Heretics!
Heretics!
Heretics, I say!
How dare they? So there's also the really fun connection that there's an association with witches and brooms because of pagan fertility rituals.
Well, I know that in like my Halloween knowledge, I know that like there's traditions for like before a harvest as crops are growing that women, and I think Ben maybe too, would run through fields holding brooms up to the air and like jumping really high, trying to entice the crops to grow that high.
Oh, that's fun.
And I know that's like a fertility broom tie-in, more so for like these plants, like trying to get the plants to grow this high. And of course things like that would eventually be like demonized, like,
yeah. So that's a great explanation for like the rural farmers leaping and dancing with some sort of pole or pitchfork or broom. Mm-hmm. It does say that this is more typically done in the full moon, but I'm sure that they would probably do it at any time that they felt necessary.
Yeah, it depends on the region, the climate, when your crops are growing. Yeah, a lot of variations.
So there is a theory, though, that maybe that particular type of dance, the broomstick dance, so may become confused and with the common accounts of what witches flying through at night on their way to, you know, like orgies or other illicit meetings.
What witches are doing, yeah.
Yeah, well, like what they're doing, you know, like
orgies, eating some babies or something, yeah.
Well, and to expand on that just a little bit further, Sweden does have a summer tradition that's called Midsummer, and during that festival, people will dance around a giant maypole. And there are theories that that is supposed to be, the maypole itself is a symbol of fertility. I am hoping to do an episode about that in the future because there is a lot of information on that as well.
See, I would love for you to do that because I've been like tracing a lot of my ancestry, and I've kind of pinpointed a region in Germany where a lot of my ancestors came from and where my mom's maiden name is from. And they had, I don't think all Germans had like maypole celebrations, but this region did. So I would love to learn more about maypoles and what they mean, what they symbolize, you know, why some people still do it today.
So there's another theory that I just think is great and I need to share it with you.
Mm-hmm.
The theory behind this association of witches with brooms could also stem from hallucinogenic substances.
Yes!
Have you heard anything about this?
Yes, I have looked into this before. I have thoughts, but continue.
It is also so fun because, of course, these hallucinogenics are only used by witches, only used during witchcrafts, only used for rituals. So all of it is definitely to pinpoint and focus and demonize this made-up group of people that So it's suggested that witches applied these quote-unquote ointments containing psychoactive compounds These compounds could include belladonna or mandrake. There's a lot of different things that could possibly have inside, be created from. They could use it on their skin. They could use it in their mucous membrane, such as their nose, or more intimate places on the human body.
Below the belt.
These substances induce hallucinations or altered states of consciousness, which lead to a sensation of flying or levitation. So in folklore, witches were said to have applied these ointments on their broomsticks or other objects, and then ride them through the night sky, attending these Sabbaths and gatherings with other witches and with the devil, sacrificing, stealing souls, etc. I think it's such an interesting way to say that these people were getting absolutely stoned.
They were. And I don't know if you have in your notes, like, the specific, like, origin point of applying it on broomsticks and writing it.
There's a couple. I found a couple of English, and I also found a couple of Irish pieces of literature, but I didn't get too far down the hole.
Down the hole?
See what I did there.
Yeah, because I know, because I've looked in this before, and it was literally like, I couldn't tell you the year, I couldn't tell you names, but it was like, there was one initial case. This woman is suspected of being a witch, and while, I don't know if it was the magistrates or whoever were searching her home, they open her closet, and in her closet, there's, like, a broom and this, like, ointment or flying oil, whatever you want to call it. And so, them being a bunch of dirty birds, they're like, I bet she's putting it on that and writing it. And then that's where we just decide to get this whole thing this, from.
It's also just those two things don't make sense. Like, if we want to really talk about the logistics of putting an ointment that's full of hallucinogenics on an item, I'm like, you can't fly then. If it's, yeah. Like, it's you're hallucinating. You're pretending you're flying in your head. Like, it's yeah. not happening.
Nope, it's not. And then it's like, okay, A, like, people have been doing hallucinogenics for, like, since the beginning of man. So, like, let's not say, like, this is just for witches. But also, like, a lot of these ointments, it kind of depends how much you use. Because, like, I've, like, medicinally used belladonna before. Like, a tiny bit can help you medicinally. If you take a lot of it with other stuff, it could be psychoactive. If you take too much, it'll poison you and kill you. So it's like, these ointments might not have always even been hallucinogenics. It'll only do that if you take too much. These guys just like to jump to conclusions, I guess, and be like, oh, she's getting high on this. She's a witch.
So I'm so sorry. But to wrap up this long episode, we can just take a moment to appreciate how cultures migrate and shift and merge and new traditions are formed over time.
Religious syncretism or cultural yes. syncretism. I love it. I'm here for it.
And some of them are so similar, like with some candy or eggs or goodies. And some of them are totally different, like dressing little children up as witches and sending them around. Like, it's yeah. so cute.
When you mentioned that's like an Easter thing, I'm like, for real? Like, why couldn't we have more Swedish immigrants that like brought that here? Like, I'm all for it. Please.
I also think that when you think about it in the terms of the tiny little story I told, like, once the year starts getting cold and then the only other holidays are something in December and then the new year and then it's several months of just snow and cold.
Yeah.
It's kind of nice to have a tiny tradition that you're able to do and that it's so sweet.
It's sweet and it's fun and it's cute.
I think it's such a nice way to bring together a community after a long winter.
But what is stopping you from dressing up as the Swedish witch for Easter? Carla, please. Please, please. I will Photoshop a picture of you dressed as a Swedish witch if I have to.
Oh my gosh. I don't know that I even have anything that I could. I don't know that I have a skirt. Like,
I need to throw on a headscarf. I'll do the rest.
Oh my gosh, I love
Photoshop it. Photoshop rosy cheeks and a little broom. It'll be great.
As always, thank you for listening. We invite you to post some of your own fascinating folklore or delicious recipes for a treat in the comments. If you leave us a scary or a silly review wherever you listen to your podcast, it really helps us. Follow us on all socials. We are Cryptid Picnic Podcast on Instagram, Threads, and Facebook.
You can also follow me on my own Instagram at it's Ivy Boyd and TikTok at Ivy_Boyd. I promise it's a good time for even more spooky content. And join us next time for another installment of Cryptic Picnic, where we will bring you more stories of intrigue, discovery, and laughter.
Join us or else.
This podcast is researched, produced, and edited by both Ivy and Carla. Music is by Dimitri Terrace from Pixabay.
Now it's time for a reel of delightful mishaps and unexpected moments. Let's dive into some bloopers.
Did you get it out of your system?
Yeah, I'm good.
Okay, you're good. Okay, cut that.
It may snow. Oh my god.
It may stew.
Oh yeah, this is going super.
It's going great.
So I don't know if there's anyone who is native to Norwegian. Oh my god, I
Norway.
Can't say.
Norwegian.
I wrote Norwegian, and the way that I said the sentence, it sounded weird. You sound like the woman from Outlander. Gosh, I can't think of her name.
Do I? Like my voice?
No. Like, do you know the plot? Like the plot of Outlander?
No, I've never seen it.
Okay. I don't know if we want to put this in the, like, actual episode, but, like, the plot of Outlander is that this woman is from the Second World War, and she is, like, a nurse during World War, and she's on a second honeymoon in Scotland with her husband, but she's then suddenly transported to a very mysterious world, and she still happens to be in Scotland, but during a completely different year.
I honeymooned with my husband in Scotland.
Did you touch a rock and suddenly you met a man who was like, ooh la la, look at you.
Yes, I did. Oh my gosh.
So the point was, though, is that she was essentially a nurse and she understands medicine and how medicine works. And people start questioning her knowledge because she just shows up out of nowhere suddenly. She can't explain how she got there. All she says is she touched a rock and she was there. That sounds witchcrafty.
Yeah, that's pretty
and
sus.
Then she also has all of this knowledge of medicine and how these things interact with each other, and so then, like, it starts being like a thing where people are like, are you a witch? Yeah. But are you a witch? And I was like, huh, maybe every single witch is from a different time. Did anyone think of that?
Yep, they all time traveled. Boom. Cracked the case.